Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the EIM Governing Body General Session. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Instructions will be given at that time. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star then zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I'd like to turn the conference over to our host, Mr. Roger Cullinan. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. Let me go ahead and take roll, and I will turn it over to our chair for the agenda. Carl Linville?
Here.
John Prescott?
Here.
Anita Decker?
Here.
Ellery Fong?
Here.
Rob Konzioka?
Here.
And welcome, Rob, our new member. Let me turn this over to you, Carl, for the agenda.
Great. Thank you very much, Roger, and thank you, everyone, for accommodating this change in meeting. I think this is going to work smoothly today. I just want everyone to know that the California ISO has been briefing the EIM governing body on the preparations and adaptations being made to accommodate the coronavirus situation. And we have a high level of confidence in the staff's handling of this situation, and we really want to thank them for their diligence and also for keeping us informed and in the loop. I'm sure that this will come up several times today as we talk about schedules and events and things like that. We'll probably be hearing a little bit about how changes due to the coronavirus may affect some events in a hopefully relatively minor way. But I think for now, that's all we will really say. Public press releases have been put out by the California ISO. I direct you to the California ISO website to look at those if you haven't had a chance to see those so far. I do want to welcome Rob Konzioka to the governing body. This is his first meeting. Absolutely delighted to have him. Also want to congratulate Roger Cullinan for almost pronouncing his name completely correctly. It's quite an accomplishment. But anyway, welcome, Rob. Great to have you, and look forward to your participation today. With that, let's go to public comment. Operator, is there anyone on the phone expressing a desire to make public comment at this time?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to make a public comment, please hit 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. No comments in queue.
Okay, over to you, Roger.
Thank you, Carl. We need a decision on the general session minutes for January 22nd, 2020.
This is Val, so moved.
This is John, on second.
So John second, Val first on that. And I will go ahead and just go through the roll for the decision on that. Carl?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Anita?
Aye.
Valerie?
Yes.
And Robert Konzioka.
Thank you, Roger. I was not in attendance at that meeting, so I will abstain.
Excellent. And did I actually pronounce that correctly?
Yes, you did, Roger.
Well, okay, twice. I better stop there. All right, back to you, Carl.
Okay, thank you very much, Roger. Next on our docket today, we have a report from Therese Hampton on the Governance Review Committee. Therese?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. Okay. Thanks. I want to give an update on where the Governance Review Committee is at, and I'll just give you a little bit of background, just a reminder for folks of what we've done so far. The Governance Review Committee issued a scoping paper on January 29th. We held a webinar to review the paper on February 5th, and then took written comment through February 21st and received 16 written set of comments. And yesterday, we held a webinar, a stakeholder workshop via webinar to kind of review comments and get kind of a deeper perspective on those comments. We had a great set of panelists, six different people representing the EIM entities, the body of state regulators, PG&E, public interest organizations, and Northwest Public Power. And they gave presentations, which are all online on the Governance Review Committee website if folks want to go and see those, in addition to all the comments are online. But they gave presentations and then also answered questions from the Governance Review Committee and from callers into the webinar. And it was a really helpful conversation. I think from the GRC members, the feeling was it really helped people to understand the context and the underlying interests behind the comments that that were submitted. It was a 4-hour webinar, and there were still more issues to discuss. So that will kind of lead in a little bit to what some of our next steps are. We met briefly after the call yesterday, and in early February, in that February 5th webinar, we had shared a draft schedule, which suggested that we might target a draft straw proposal by April 28th for discussion at a May 5th meeting. We don't believe that's a target that we intend or want to meet at this point. We really want to spend some time to take a deeper dive into the comments themselves and make sure we really understand the themes, see where the similarities and the differences are, and see what additional questions we might want to have answered. So we're going to take that time between now and we've got a couple of executive sessions planned for April, so we'll take that time between now and then to really dig deep into the comments, and then we'll reevaluate the schedule at those meetings in April. That's the extent of my update at this point. I'm open to answering questions or anything else you might want to hear.
Yeah, thank you very much, Therese. So first of all, I want to turn to the governing body and see if anyone has any comments they'd like to make about the GRC or any questions for Therese.
This is Val. Go ahead.
Well, this is John. I'm just going to mention, you know, thanks, Therese, for your leadership on this and to the GRC in general for the work, but I guess my comment is that I really understand and appreciate if you need to take more time. I'd rather have you time and get it right rather than try to rush it to a schedule that's been put out there artificially.
Thanks, Val. Thanks, John. And I think – go ahead, Therese. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that was part of the conversation that we had, is that sometimes it's good to go slow to go fast. And so really kind of understanding the comments and what will be the foundation, I think, of the next steps, we decided that was the best way to spend the time.
So thank you to Therese, to the Governance Review Committee, to all the stakeholders. I understand there were quite a few who called in and stuck with us for the entire length of the webinar. And then I don't think I've thanked staff. Carl, you did it early on when you noted that we've now moved to a different format for our meetings for the time being, and I don't think I gave enough credit to staff for all the scrambling that they've done to make the meetings for yesterday and today still happen, even though we changed the format. I guess for me, I think it is indeed a very serious issue, this whole governance thing. I think yesterday in our discussions, we started to, I mean, people even real time were coming to different realizations as they listened to each other, and I think there's some real value in the communication that we have with each other. So, you know, again, this is a dynamic process, and I'm glad it's happening.
Great.
Carl, this is Rob.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I would just like to compliment Therese and the entire GRC and all of the commenters. It was clear when looking at all of the comments that were submitted online in advance and then the presentations that were made and the discussion that occurred afterwards, that they've been very thoughtful. And I realized that governance is always a challenge. And even though things are going well, everyone needs to be mindful of where we might be in 2 years and 3 years and 5 years and beyond. And I would echo John's comment that getting this right and working through the fundamentals is critically important, and that and the GRC taking their time to address that is really probably the most important part of the process. So my compliments.
Thank you. Thanks to all of you for the feedback. It's really helpful.
Yeah. Before you go, Therese, I just want to briefly see if anyone on the phone outside of the governing body would like to say anything or ask anything of you before you step off. So, operator, could you please ask?
Need me to open up Lisa Tawney's line?
Sure. Please open up whoever would like to speak.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, you can hit 1 then 0.
Carl, it doesn't sound like we have any questions on the from public.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yep. Okay. Thank you, Therese. Sounds like you're doing a wonderful job. So thanks very much.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Now we're going to go to the next item on the agenda, an update on the body of state regulators from Commissioner Lisa Tawney. Lisa.
Lisa Tawney, Commissioner at the OPUC and the Bosser Chair. And I, too, am sorry we can't meet in person, and I really appreciate the CAISO staff working so hard to make all this technology work for us. But I thank you, as always, for this opportunity and invite your questions here or anytime. I know that with the challenges with travel, it can be hard to keep in touch the way we need to as we work through these issues, so I just want to articulate again that my door is open for any of you, the governing body members, or any stakeholders as we work through these complicated processes. And in particular, I know also my colleague Bosser members, including Commissioner Retchoffen in California, would really welcome any stakeholder engagement. Since we can't be in person and people can't grab us in the hallway, please do feel like you can reach out to us. And I want to join in congratulating Member Kanzioka for his appointment to the EIM. We're really excited and think he makes an excellent addition to the current makeup of the body. And I want to finally thank Vice Chair Fornstrom for providing the update last month when I couldn't join you. Since our last update, the Bosser's work has really been centered on understanding the GRC scoping paper, identifying the issues in that paper that are critical to Bosser members, and working towards consensus comments on those issues. Excuse me. We appreciate the opportunity, really, to engage yesterday. I learned a great deal from the other panelists and the discussion, and we actually have an update call tomorrow for the Bosser, and I'll be sharing some of that perspective with Bosser members. For the sake of transparency and to provide the governing body members some context for the comments we submitted and how I can engage in a forum like that despite us being a group of 8 and growing to 11 commissioners who have to make decisions in our own states on the same issues, I thought I'd take a quick minute and just describe how we arrive at comments on complex and important topics like this. because it's not self-evident, and it doesn't work quite the same way as industry groups often arrive at consensus comments because we have this complexity of decisions in our home states. And so just very quickly, we work together to identify the critical issues, and then we ask staff to really briefly and try to, in a very neutral way, to outline the topic and the context for that issue and any background that our members may need to know. And you need remember, we're at very different places in our journey with ACAISO, so some of our commissions are very new to it. Some of our commissions have worked on these issues for a few years now, so there's always a learning gap to close when there's an issue. And then that neutrality is really important because we come from very different places, right, in terms of our state's perspectives on these important questions. And we include and welcome the states that have not yet gone live on the EIM, even though they won't get to officially vote until the utilities in their states have gone live. We fold them in early because the learning curve is steep. So then we discuss about the issue together. We explore whether it's an issue we even want to weigh in on and whether we can find consensus. And that consensus-based decision-making really takes time and conversation. It requires some underlying alignment to build from, but that conversation that we have around the issue is really important for us to identify where can we find common interests. We tend to avoid writing comments where the consensus we can reach is so high level that it says nothing. We don't think, as decision makers, that's very useful. We really try to focus on the issues where our perspective is unique or the issue is really material to our states. And as decision makers ourselves, we really understand how stakeholder perspectives on an issue help to illuminate its many facets. As we heard yesterday in the four-hour webinar, lots of different elements of these nuanced decisions were coming to light. And so we really strive for our comments to provide the governing body that information you need on how states are understanding an issue. Where we can't find consensus, I think, is just as important as where we can, and tells you as decision makers a great deal about what is hard and what is working as the market evolves and expands. And that seeking consensus also means we really can't put forward positions that advocate for one market participant or class, one resource type, one geographic location to the detriment of others. It really makes us sit together and think about our differently situated states and how we can, what kind of market will work across that footprint. That process takes a lot of time. It's not easy. It really requires some neutral and trusted facilitation and serious engagement by my colleagues, the members. And I think when we look at our peer organizations, but also as we see ourselves engaging in this hard work, I think that hard work serves the market well. It really requires that we invest the time in educating ourselves while the issue is ripening. We clarify our own perspectives for ourselves and each other before the moment of decision has arrived or passed. And I think that disciplined engagement is healthy for the market because it avoids after-the-fact sort of regulatory debates and misunderstandings that could be disruptive. So that's what we're really striving for. I think you see us really learning how to do that together as a body as we put these comments out on these hard issues. And while our comments don't bind any commission or commissioner in proceedings in their states, I think the process we're striving, we're learning how to do together ensures we've come along on the journey with all the other stakeholders and can focus our questions and concerns on really material issues rather than chasing down rabbit trails that might confuse folks. In the ideal world, if the BOSR is working well, we're doing better for customers and the market through that hard work that we're doing. We're preparing right now through education to be ready to engage that straw proposal, recognizing it might be in that second round of questions that we get as opposed to the straw proposal, but we're working hard to educate ourselves and be ready for that. And similarly on the EDAM cycle of issues. And we continue to practice our consensus building skills and you know, who knows what other benefits the West might see with regulators from 11 states regularly and deeply listening to each other on these really crucial issues. Who knows what could emerge? But we really look forward to continued engagement with you, the board, with other stakeholders, and with these really critical issues as we try to work through our comments and show up in the process. We are similarly working through what our next in-person BOSR meeting might look like. Stay tuned for news. We have some great panels lined up, but like all other conferences right now, it's a little in flux. So I'm available for your questions now or anytime.
Great, thanks. Thank you, Letha. Letha, if I could just ask if you, I don't believe yet that the CREPC and the Western Interstate Energy Board have made an announcement about the adjacent meetings that are happening next to the BOSR, but just if I could just ask you if you know anything about that.
I know that the leadership across all of those organizations is in conversations today and tomorrow. We had, and I anticipate we'll an announcement will follow in the next couple of days, maybe by the end of the week. Maybe by the end of the day tomorrow, but maybe by Monday. But there's active conversation going on.
Okay,
Chair Linville, Chair Linville, this is Stacey Crowley. Hi. There was an email that went out just a bit ago from the WEEB CREPC folks. Letha, I know you were concentrating on these remarks, so it did come out.
Sorry.
Yes, okay. And the meeting is canceled, but they are looking to do some Friday-based webinars on some issues. So that was the announcement that just went out.
Excellent. Thank you, Stacey.
Sure.
Just, you know, we're all just adapting in real time.
Exactly. So just before I ask my fellow governing body members if they have any questions or comments for you, you know, as a commissioner, how dependent you are to stakeholders and participants in your proceeding to bring information to you to communicate their perspectives and to bring you the information you need in order to make the decisions in the public interest. And so it's evident in your comments to us that you understand that we have that very same need. So thank you very much for how seriously you take it and the body of state regulators takes this. And I personally have no doubt that there are going to be benefits of this collaboration far beyond these immediate activities in and of themselves.
Thanks.
Yeah. Anybody else from the governing body wish to speak? Okay. Hearing none. Operator, I'll try again this time. Is there any comment from the general room, from the larger room, or any questions that they might have for Commissioner Taney?
Again, if you have a question, you may hit 10 at this time. At this time, there are no questions in queue.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you, Commissioner Taney. Next on our agenda, next on our agenda, we have a regional issues forum update from Pam Sporberg.
Hi, good morning. This is Pam Sporberg with Portland General Electric, and I am the chair of the EIM Regional Issues Forum. Like others, we hosted the first web-only regional issues forum yesterday, and I also share my appreciation of the ISO staff, especially Nikki Imam, for the support and help in making that meeting a success. I do want to note that we will have a temporary change in risk leadership. Jennifer Gardner, who is currently our vice chair, will be going on maternity leave, and Matt LaCar, who has previously served as vice chair, has offered to step in for Jennifer while she's out. I do want to extend my congratulations to Jennifer and my appreciation for Matt for stepping into this role again. Our first panel yesterday was on EIM best practices, and we focused on resource optimization. We heard from three different EIM participants with very different resource mixes. And across all the presentations, I think one of the key themes that emerged was balancing fuel supply through bidding parameters and really an emphasis on the value of post-market analytics. We also heard from Tucson Electric Power and Xcel Energy on their decision to join the Energy Imbalance Market. And as always, these presentations offered a unique perspective on the path that each participant takes on their journey for joining the EIM. And our last panel was our EDAM education topic, which is a new theme that we were having through these regional issues forums. And it was a foundational market design element looking at congestion in the EIM and the day-ahead markets. And I think for many market stakeholders, the understanding of congestion and how it's calculated in the LMP and the role it plays in the market is not very well understood. We were fortunate to have Susan Pope, who has been a thought leader in market development from the very beginning, who was able to provide an excellent foundational presentation on congestion. We also heard from both the EIM and the ISO on how congestion works in the various markets today. And we hope that this information will help stakeholders as we think about how to allocate congestion rents in the EDAM context. Our next RIF meeting, like others, is a little in flux. The meeting itself will take place on May 5th, but we will continue to work with the ISO to monitor the situation around travel before deciding whether this will be an in-person or web-only meeting. In the meantime, I welcome feedback on the WebEx format and, as always, welcome suggestions for agenda items. And that concludes my update on the Regional Issues Forum.
Great. Thank you, Pam. Do we have comments or questions from the governing body for Pam?
So this is Anita, and I have a comment. So I thought the meeting yesterday was really well done, and what I really appreciated, well, two things I really appreciated. One was seeing the decision kind of process that Xcel went through, and then also the information from Tucson. Those presentations to me should possibly be in our board meeting, because it's helpful for us to know as we're doing outreach kind of what's going on. And I realize I think every member of the board might have been on the call yesterday, but if you didn't, I'd encourage everyone to look at those presentations. The second thing was I appreciated the educational segment of your agenda. So well done.
Thank you. I think the new entrance presentation has been a tradition in the RIF since its foundation, and I think we can certainly engage in a dialogue about whether that's a more appropriate item to move into the governing body.
This
is Rob.
Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
I would make some similar comments to Anita's. This was my first opportunity to observe the RIF in action, and my compliments to all of the presenters. I thought that the material was very practical. I also thought they shared some very honest comments that you normally would not have an opportunity to hear, especially the thoughts behind decision making. I thought it was really the comments from all of them were actually quite good. The one that maybe was most of interest in that it was surprising were the ones from Xcel and having to show their thoughts on the transition that's occurred up in the Rocky Mountain region. And for me, you know, they ended up with some outcomes that really were quite different than I would have expected from 6 months or a year ago. And I thought that the material they presented helped explain their journey and their process and their decision-making and why they are joining the EIM. So, but all of the presenters were good, and the material was really at a level to which I think just about everybody could understand. And so they really deserve a round of compliments for being able to target it that way. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate the feedback, and we work hard to get that level, the right balance between detail and ability to bring all stakeholders along in the dialogue. I did get a note from Nikki that we had 191 people participating over the phone and 117 via the WebEx. So I think a good, robust turnout among stakeholders.
Wow, that's impressive. Okay, any other comments from the governing body? Valajan, anything? Okay, operator, back to you to see if there are any comments or questions from our larger audience.
Once again, if you have a comment or question, you may hit 1 and 0 at this time. At this time, there are no questions or comments in queue.
Okay. Thank you very much, operator. Okay. Now moving on to our next – thank you, Pam, for that update. Moving on to our next item, briefing on policy outlook from the California ISO staff. Brad, are you providing that update?
Yes, I am. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. So first slide, Jennifer. This is a policy update that we give once a quarter. So what I'm going to do in this policy update is to review updates to our 2020 annual policy development plan and then go through the EIM-related initiatives individually and give you updates on the status of those. Okay, so moving on to the 2020 annual plan on the next slide. This is our 2020 annual plan that we, I believe we presented to you, this to you near the end of last year. A few updates to this, nothing major. The hybrid resources initiative has been extended out somewhat and as long to this fall completion. Although, as I'll note in the upcoming slides, we've broken that up into phases. The System Market Power Initiative, we've also extended that out a little bit to plan to come to the September EM Governing Body and ISO Board meetings. And then the Flexible Ramping Products Initiative has been extended a little bit. A couple things I'd note, the CCE Tariff Clarifications Initiative up near the top, which changes bidding obligations of certain California resource adequacy resources, so it's not within your governance role, but just to note that that will be coming to our March board meeting. And then I'd note that the another EIM initiative that I don't talk about in the subsequent slides, but I know EIM participants are interested in, is this real-time settlement review initiative right in the middle there. That came about as part of our initiative last summer, real-time market neutrality settlement, addressing an issue related to EIM settlement of neutrality charges. As part of that initiative, we committed to conducting a more comprehensive review of all of our real-time settlement uplift charges. We're kicking that off internally, and then we'll be starting that process hopefully within the next couple months with stakeholders. Okay, moving on.
Brad?
Yes.
Yeah, if I could just interrupt you just briefly. So far, we're anticipating that there hasn't been any adjustment to any of these schedules owing to slightly more complicated stakeholder interactions that may happen for a little bit, right? These are, so far, the working assumption is that the deadlines still largely will be able to be met, or could you just say something generally about how you all are viewing that and how you are looking at that going forward?
Yeah, these are updates to our plan, and you might say that our scheduling is based on more normal operations. You know, a lot of this, you know, is this meeting evidences we think we can accomplish through telephone conferences and, you know, maybe even potentially people telecommuting. A lot of our stakeholder meetings, you know, for some time, some number of years, we've conducted through teleconferences. So, you know, hopefully things will go as planned, but like everything else that's going on, that's a good point that, you know, these schedules are developed based on normal operations, and we got to keep in our mind that things could potentially slip due to the disruptions that are going on.
Okay. Well, thank you for your efforts in keeping the schedule. Appreciate it. Thanks for that little explanation. Go ahead.
Okay. First initiative here, FERC Order 831, Import Bidding and Market Parameters. FERC Order 831 was an order issued by FERC a number of years ago that required ISOs to increase their bid caps from $1,000 to $2,000 with the caveat that bids above $2,000 need to be based on costs that are verified by the ISO before they're put into the market. And then there's provisions to the extent that ISO can't verify costs before the market that the ISO needs to provide make-whole payments. This issue addresses a couple of issues related to our FERC Order 831 compliance filing, which we made last August. It was due in September, but there was a couple issues that came up between the time the ISO completed its policy on complying with 831 and the time we made our filing. The first of those issues is related to import bids above $1,000. In our filing, the ISO did not propose to cost verify import bids above $1,000 because in FERC's Order 831, they didn't require it. The other issue relates to the prices at which the market relaxes constraint in the event it can't reach a feasible solution. Most notable among these is the power balance constraint, which relaxes the constraint in the market. The supply has to equal demand in the case that there's not enough supply bids to meet the demand in the market. We didn't propose changes to our approach for setting the market constraint relaxation parameters. What we proposed was to set the power balance constraint equal to the maximum bid price, and so as a result of our compliance filing, that would set the power balance constraint at $2,000 rather than $1,000. This, related to that, this initiative is pursuing an alternative methodology where the ISO market would not set the power balance constraint at all times at $2,000. It would leave it at $1,000. And it would go higher than $1,000 in the event that we have bids above $1,000, which it needs to do. Otherwise, you wouldn't clear bids higher than the power balance constraint. So we're looking at that alternative as well as a cost verification methodology for import bids. We plan to have a draft final proposal out on April 8th. And then we plan it to bring to the June 2020 EM governing body for to present to you, and then the July ISO board. The EM governing body classification for this is an advisory role because these changes are generally applicable to the real-time market. So moving on to next initiative. Yeah. The Hybrid Resources Initiative is making changes to the ISO's modeling of hybrid resources, which are resources that combine traditional generation along with storage. There's a great interest in these kind of resources, and we have a number of them in our queue, so it's important to evolve our market to be able to accommodate them. We've broken this initiative up into two phases. The phase one is making relatively straightforward changes to the rules to establish the maximum output the ISO market uses for these kinds of resources. And then the second phase would be more extensive market refinements. These changes are generally applicable to the market, so it's under the EIM governing body advisory role. We plan to have a second revised straw proposal out next month, and then this first phase we would bring to your June meeting, and then to the July board meeting, with the second phase going to both you and the ISO board in November. So moving on to the System Market Power Mitigation Initiative is developing an approach to do system-level market power mitigation for the California ISO Balancing Authority area for the, and the approach is limited to the real-time market only, at least in this first phase of this initiative. The significance of system-level market power mitigation is that for the ISO Balancing Authority area, the market power mitigation processes just look for work for locally transmission-constrained regions because of concerns about increasingly tight supply conditions coming up, particularly starting next summer. There's been concern about potential system-level market power mitigation in the California ISO Balancing Authority area, so we're pursuing this initiative. We plan to post the revised straw proposal March 31st, and plan to bring it to you and the ISO board in September. Currently, this is under the EIM governing body advisory role. Our current proposal only affects the EIM in that it changes the calculation of what's called the competitive LMP, which is a price used when mitigating energy bids in conjunction with resources default energy bids. However, we're considering a revision that more robustly calculates available supply than our first proposal did. As part of this proposal calculates supply available to the California ISO Balancing Authority area through the EIM, and we've realized that if we move forward with this initiative, there may be a merit to also proposing this approach for the entire EIM, given that implementation is feasible on the relatively short time frame we're planning. Proposing this approach for the entire EIM would be beneficial because it would more accurately calculate each EIM balancing authority area's supply and demand than the current market power mitigation approach that when market power mitigation is triggered, only looks at EIM balancing authority areas, supply and demand, balancing area by balancing area individually. So moving on to slide 7.
That would be come.
Oh, yeah, I should mention, sorry, I forgot to mention, Mark just reminded me, that if we do move forward with this approach, it would change the classification from advisory role to likely hybrid role, because it would be proposing changes to the EIM market power mitigation, and I note that this is our preliminary determination of the roles, because we've only fairly recently been considering whether this is appropriate to extend to the broader EIM more quickly. The Energy Storage and Distributed Energy Resources Phase 4 initiative is looking at enhancements to the energy storage and distributed energy resource market model and rules. Again, this is generally applicable to all resources, so it'd be under the EIM governing body advisory role, and we have a draft final proposals coming out in April, and we would plan to bring this to the September EIM governing body briefing and ISO board decision. And I just note that, you know, you'll notice there's a relatively long time span on most of these initiatives between the time of our draft final proposal and bringing it for governance approval. The reason for that is this year we've been trying to move to an approach where we, after completing the draft final proposal, we move into the more detailed business requirements, which is the document used to develop software. And then we also develop the tariff prior to bringing that to the EIM governing body and the board. In past years, we had done those things after bringing it to the governing body and the board. And because a lot of times details come up in those processes of developing business requirements and the tariff that weren't fully considered, you know, in the more abstract policy development process, we think it's more beneficial to do those things before we really consider our proposal done. Okay, moving on to the next slide.
Slide 8.
Yes, slide 8. The flexible ramping product enhancements, this is a very important initiative because the flexible ramping product is a product that reserves ramping capacity on resources to provide energy in future intervals if it's needed, you know, kind of an energy buffer. And then it also works to more appropriately compensate resources that are being ramped in future intervals for needs in, excuse me, more appropriately compensates resources that are being ramped in the current interval for energy needs in future intervals. This is important under a complicated, so to speak, multi-interval optimization like the ISO real-time market has, because without that, resources don't get fully compensated for this movement in the current interval for future intervals. Now that part of the flexible ramping product works great, but a price performance report we completed last summer determined that the part of the flexible ramping product that reserves capacity for future intervals was not working as well as it could because the current flexible ramping product is not locational. And so what can happen is the flexible ramping product can procure capacity behind transmission constraints that it isn't deliverable to provide energy. This is particularly important because the flexible ramping product design, a good portion of that will be used as part of the new imbalance reserve product that we're developing in the day-ahead market, and that will be an important component of the extended day-ahead market. So this issue is addressing the deliverability directly by pursuing a nodal approach, which would procure and price flexible ramping product nodally, you know, similar to the way we procure and price energy. It's also addressing eligibility of resources to provide flexible ramping product. This is largely we've seen that demand response resources can be awarded flexible ramping product even though they cannot be dispatched by the 5-minute market when it's needed. So this initiative is addressing that issue. And then there's an issue having to do with ramp management between the 15-minute and the 5-minute markets, or how much flexible ramping product to release in the 15-minute market to avoid price spikes in the 15-minute market rather than holding on to it so it's available for the final real-time dispatch in the 5-minute market. This will have an EIM governing body advisory role, because like a lot of other of these initiatives that's generally applicable to the real-time market. We're planning on the straw proposal to be posted real soon on March 16th, and then we would bring it to the EIM governing body and the ISO board in November. Moving on to next slide. Yep. The variable operations maintenance cost review is updating the CalISO's calculation of variable operations and maintenance costs that it uses to calculate default energy bids, which are bids used to market power mitigation, and then how it calculates the commitment cost bid caps. Again, this is a generally applicable market rule, so it'd be under the EIM governing body's advisory rule. We plan the draft final proposal in June and bring it to the November EIM governing body briefing and ISO board decision. Next slide.
Moving to slide 10.
The Day Ahead Markets Enhancement Initiative is exploring fairly significant changes to our Day Ahead Market. It's looking at co-optimizing supply based on both cleared demand and the demand forecast. Currently, the ISO Day Ahead Market co-optimizes energy and ancillary services in the integrated forward market, and then commits capacity to meet the load forecast. In the event the load forecast is higher than what cleared in the Day Ahead Market, through the subsequent residual unit commitment process, this initiative is exploring co-optimizing that what's currently residual unit commitment schedules with energy schedules. The advantage of that is you can do both of those more efficiently if they're co-optimized. For example, if the residual unit commitment process is going to commit an additional generator, currently the energy market doesn't know that, so to speak, but a co-optimized approach enables both resources for both of those needs to meet the energy needs and to meet the forecast needs. They can be co-optimized in one process. And then, like I talked about under the Flexible Ramping Project Initiative, we're also looking at a day-ahead imbalance reserve product, which is important in our current market to line up capacity to meet uncertainty in the net load that materializes between in day-ahead and real-time. And it's also an important component of the extended day-ahead market, because it will be a mechanism with which EIM entities could trade capacity to meet their resource efficiency test in the day-ahead market. Regarding the governance role, the current EIM governing body charter specifies an advisory role for components that change generally applicable real-time market rules. So under those existing rules, the EIM governing body would have an advisory role only for parts of this initiative that happen to affect real-time market rules. However, because this initiative will form the basis of the extended day-ahead market, management plans to request that the CalISO Board of Governors give the EIM governing body role an advisory role for the entire initiative. We posted a straw proposal in February. We had a one-day workshop on that in conjunction with 2 days of extended day-ahead market initiative workshops in February. We followed that up with another phone call to present additional material and answer additional questions and allow for additional discussion. We're then planning on a revised straw proposal to be posted in May, and then this would go to you and the ISO board sometime in 2021. Next slide, please.
Slide 11.
Okay, then finally, the extended day-ahead market, as everyone knows, is looking at extending the day-ahead market to EIM, balancing authority areas. We're planning on tackling this initiative, because it's a big initiative with a lot of parts. So we've broken it up into quote unquote bundles. What our plan is to address each of these bundles sequentially, so everyone can focus on a more limited set of issues, and then we can run those to ground before we move on to subsequent issues. We also plan on though the final governance approval won't come till for some time, next year if all goes as planned. We plan to once we've completed a bundle and gotten to a point to something that's near a draft final proposal, we plan to come brief you on what the conclusion of that was. The first bundle that we're currently tackling involves how all the various EIM participants would provide transmission to be available to the extended day-ahead market. We're also discussing topic that was discussed at the RIF yesterday, how the congestion rents associated with that transmission would be distributed, and then it's also looking at the resource efficiency evaluation, which is also part of the current EIM. It's a mechanism that ensures that each balancing authority area come into the market with sufficient load and generation to meet its own needs before allowing trades between the various balancing authority areas. The second bundle will look at how we're going to account for GHG costs, take on ancillary services, changes to the full network model the market uses that are necessary for the EDAM and the administrative three. And then the third bundle covers, again, important but less fundamental items. Similar to the day-ahead market, the current rules would only give the EIM governing body advisory role for real-time, components that affected the real-time market. However, similar to the day-ahead market, but actually a little different, we'll request that the CAISO Board of Governors give the EIM governing body joint approval authority for the entire initiative, because obviously, the extended day-ahead market is very, very closely linked to the energy imbalance market. We received comments on the February workshops I talked about a minute ago, earlier this month, and we're working on a straw proposal to be posted April 14th. I say straw proposal, but this will be a fairly high-level straw proposal because we still have work to do on this first bundle, ironing out the various issues. And then, like I said, the current plan is to bring this to the EIM governing body and the ISO board sometime next year. And that concludes my presentation, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. So everyone from the governing body, think about whether you'd like to step back to any of the initiatives that Brad has brought to us today for a moment while I ask this first question, which is just a clarification question. Brad, when you say the straw proposal will be posted on April 14th, you're referring to the straw proposal for Bundle 1?
Yes, that's correct. Bundle 1.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Would anybody on the EIM governing body like to go back to any of the initiatives that Brad has presented here, ask a question, or make a comment?
This is John. I would.
Okay, go for it.
So, first, a comment. Thanks, Brad, for doing this. This report always helps me in my reading queue as to how to prioritize things, since we're always digesting just a monumental amount of data. So, thanks. Two questions on two different initiatives. One is the hybrid resources. And just looking up there, you may not have the answer to this, but do you see a demand for these resources to be bidding into the EIM from the other balancing authority areas? Or is this something that you're really only seeing within the ISO? And I'm kind of thinking about, as I see the different bids for responding to IRPs, of developers now putting in VERS with storage is kind of a standard thing.
John C. Berberick, do you mind if I answer your question?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, I think this is a case where we're trying to get ahead of the curve because we, in our base market, we do have the ability for distributed resources to, you know, bundle up in aggregations and bid into our market. They can be heterogeneous or homogeneous. Now, so far, we haven't seen that much of them. However, particularly with the PSPS situation and with CCAs and things like that, we expect to see a rapid growth. All that being said, we also anticipate that it's going to be the case outside of California and that people in the energy and balance market footprints will probably, while not immediately, but will probably at some point want to leverage this kind of functionality. So I think it's a matter of making sure that we're ahead of the curve in this case.
Yeah, and to spread, I'd add that in our discussions with other ISOs, they are all also pursuing a similar initiative. This is a big issue nationwide, big topic.
Okay, thanks. That's very helpful, and I appreciate you getting ahead of it because it's of interest to me as well. And then, Carl, if I may, one more quick question.
Yep.
And this is on the EDAM report you just did, Brad. So if I look at the bundles, I think that we have not stepped on governance in any of those bundles. So I'm assuming that that's going to be a GRC issue and that's going to merge into the EDAM initiative. Is that correct?
Yeah, I didn't mention, and I guess I should have called that out on the 2020 annual plan. I didn't mention the EIM governance review because although we have this it listed here, that's an initiative that's been that's being led by the GRC. Maybe
so. John, again, Steve, if I might, we're going to have to be a little bit nimble about this because, as you heard earlier from the GRC report, that they're kind of trying to think about their timelines and things like that. We certainly think that as we move the policy needle forward, there's going to have to be some back and forth. We don't have specifics around that yet. Obviously, you can look at the bundles and think about things that might sort of have some contextual impact on what you do with governance. For instance, you know, distribution of congestion rents. What role might the EIM governing body have versus the board, as an example? So I think your point is well made, but I think we're going to have to be nimble right now. I don't think we can nail down any specifics where they're going to come together, but we're absolutely certain that they will.
Okay, thanks.
Do any of the other governing body members have a question or a comment about any of the initiatives presented by Brad?
Carl, this is Rob. I have one question for Brad regarding the flexible ramping product enhancements.
Okay.
Sure. Good morning, Brad, and I'd like to thank you for providing the synopsis of each of these initiatives. It is very helpful in keeping everything straight and understanding all of this better and then boiling things down into these quick summaries is very helpful. I have a clarification question, and it was just understanding on how this is being developed. And I thought you described under the initiative that the flexible products would be nodal-based. And so my question or clarification is did that mean it's going to get separated into an LMP-type approach? And my question along the lines is not at the BA level, or if you could expand just a little bit for me as to how this is being implemented or proposed to be implemented.
Yes, it would be it would change the flexible ramping product from being procured and priced at a BA level to being procured and priced at a nodal level. So it would have locational marginal prices more similar to energy prices like it, rather than as opposed to you know, system level price that it has today.
So this is the market.
Well, it would be so Brad, then it would be in kind of a complete and parallel with the energy side.
So this is Mark Roth there. It would be co-optimized with the energy, and what it would achieve is basically it would ensure that those, when you have that flexible ramping capacity, that that capacity is not bottled up behind a constraint and would be deliverable to serve load. And we still have overall diversity benefits, but it would actually ensure that in light of those diverse benefits, again, that flexible ramping product would be deliverable and not bottled up.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Thank you, Brad.
Sure.
This is Val, Carl.
Yep, go ahead.
Thank you. So my question is kind of about a past initiative, which is also going to be a future initiative. I saw in yesterday's ISO notice that the California Air Resources Board has issued a subpoena to get some greenhouse gas accounting data. This is something that's going to happen going forward for the next 10 years or so. And I'm reminded that there's sort of an interim solution in place right now on behalf of sort of this EIM market to ensure that the cost of associated with greenhouse gas emissions in accordance with the California policy stay in California. But could you give us a quick update on where that all is and how long that interim solution is in place?
Yeah. Hi, Val. This is Mark Rothleder. So that approach that we implemented about a year ago will remain in place until such time that through the extended day-ahead market, we determined that what we designed for GHG accounting under the extended day-ahead market may have some backward approach to the EIM as well. So that's where the GHG, any future GHG enhancements would be taken up, is effectively in bundle two of the extended day-ahead market. The subpoena that you referred to is normal course for the Air Resources Board, and they use that subpoena to help validate the data that they get directly from the compliance entities as they submit their compliance to the California Air Resources Board.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, anything else? Any other issues that anyone would like to pull out for questions for the ISO staff? Okay, hearing none, I'm going to go back to the operator. Mr. Operator, if you could please ask our broader audience if they have any comments or questions that they'd like to raise at this time about the initiatives.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a comment or question, you may hit 1 and 0 at this time. And at this time, there's no one in queue.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, next on our agenda, we have a briefing on the Western Energy Imbalance Market Benefits. Mark, are you providing that update?
Yes, I am. And thank you, Carl, and welcome, Rob, to the EIM governing body. I report out on a quarterly basis any updates in terms of progress, in terms of the onboarding of the new EIM entities, but also gives me an opportunity to go through our quarterly benefits and give some observations about how EIM is working for the quarter. So next slide, please. Slide one. Slide two, sorry. So in that regard, and in terms of the EIM update, we've been preparing for the last over a year, preparing for the onboarding of Seattle City Light and Salt River Project, and their scheduled go-live is April 1st. Both entities have completed the 100% of their readiness criteria, and the certification letters have been filed at FERC. We're monitoring the situation because as a result of the COVID-19 virus, there may be a need to stage or delay the implementation, but that, at this point, that decision has not been made. We will be prepared for April 1st, but we're prepared if a contingency plan needs to be implemented, staging that a bit later to respond to the COVID-19. In terms of 2021 and 2022, you see in the list of the entities that are onboarding, and everything is in progress for 2021 and some of the early stages for 2022 entities that are onboarding. Next slide, please. Slide three. So this is the bar graph that illustrates the benefits. We've quantified in Q4 2019. We put up a report out at the end of January, quantifying this almost $61 million of gross economic benefits of the EIM. That $60.72 million in 2019 was fairly comparable when compared to the 2018 fourth quarter, which was about $62 million. So the benefits continued to grow, but they did flatten out between 2018 and 2019. That's largely because of the fact that 2018 we saw a higher volatility in the gas market prices that affected the benefits. 2019 was a more moderate period of time for gas prices. Overall, we've achieved over $860 million of benefits for EIM entities and their respective customers. And in terms of the GHG, we've seen reductions of GHG, reductions about 15,000 metric tons, 15,000 metric tons of reduction in Q4. Next slide, please. In terms of the flexible ramping product, which we just discussed earlier about the policy, part of the benefits of the EIM is a result of that diversity of supply and demand. You get diversity benefit of the amount of flexible ramping capacity that in aggregate the EIM entities have to carry. And we've seen fairly consistent results in that about a 40 to 50% reduction in flexible ramping requirements if you compare what an individual balancing area would need to hold to cover their own variability versus in aggregate what the flexible ramping requirements would be to meet the aggregate flexible needs. The point here, though, is that we, in light of the analysis that we did in 2019 and the observation that there can be, at times, flexible ramping bottled up behind constraints, we will be undertaking the policy development effort to enhance the flexible ramping product and procurement to reduce that potential risk of having flexible ramping procured that's not deliverable between systems. That may affect and may affect the diversity benefit, but it will not eliminate the diversity benefit. It will actually make it, whatever we procure, more deliverable and enhance the flexible ramping going forward. Next slide, slide five. The next set of slides are illustrating just a comparison of the average prices in the weekly average prices in each of the EIM entity areas. And for some of the areas, it's compared to, and you can compare it to kind of the estimated proxy, what would have been the cost of imbalance prices or imbalance costs of energy in the respective areas. One thing to note is that the EIM, being a 5-minute and 15-minute market, will have higher volatility because the prices reflect the system conditions at that more granular 5- and 15-minute level, whereas the proxy prices that were used for imbalance costs previously were kind of daily indexes or peak and off-peak daily indexes that really didn't reflect the actual system conditions that occurred in real time. Overall, we're seeing fairly good consistency between the EIM prices and those previous proxy prices used for imbalance. There are some exceptions. In the APS system, you can see there were times where the EIM prices were higher and other times where it was lower. We do observe when we go back and take a look, when we see some of those higher prices, we do see a correlation of events where the EIM entity may have had a few failures of sufficiency tests. And in that regard, we do work with the EIM entities to understand the cause of those sufficiency failures and see what else needs to be done to help reduce the potential risk of those sufficiency failures. But when those resource efficiency failures occur and the area is frozen, it does lead to the susceptibility that the prices will rise in that area as a result of not being able to access the imports from the neighboring EIM balancing areas. We have a fairly low rate of overall sufficiency failures, but again, we monitor those and we work with the EIM entities to see what is the root causes of those and help address those going forward. Slide 6. Again, this is a fairly consistent pattern where the EIM entity prices in PAC East, PAC West, Portland, Puget Sound Energy are tracking fairly well and actually under the those historic or those proxy prices in those areas. And then if you go to slide 7, that's the PowerX price trends for the same period. Next slide, slide 8, please. Slide 8 is a graph that we put out as part of our quarterly results, and it's something that we've been monitoring relative to the amount of net wheel through an area in terms of flows that are occurring as a result of EIM transfers through an area versus the green, and that's the yellow bar, versus the blue and green bar, which represent the net import transfer into an area or the net export out of an area. And we monitor this because when we see the yellow bars exceeding the sum of the net import or net export, it's an indication that an area is actually, through the EIM, is facilitating more wheel through an area versus the import exports coming into the area that are the kind of the direct benefits to that area. And when we and as a result of this, we've seen in previous quarters where we've seen that wheel through volume exceed the net import, net export quantity. And that has triggered our interest in pursuing to see if there's any further enhancements in terms of compensation for those wheel-throughs, and we're taking that up through the EDAM Bundle 1 transmission effort and policy initiative. So as part of our discussions in EDAM, again, we may identify solutions that would be applicable before EDAM and apply to EIM directly. And once we identify those, we will take those and pursue those and perhaps implement those in advance of EDAM itself. Slide 9, please. Slide 9 is the trend and the quantification of the avoided curtailment. One of the big benefits of the energy imbalance market is the ability to use the energy imbalance market to take and absorb where we have oversupply in one area. We can use that oversupply, and rather than curtailing surplus clean energy, we can take that surplus clean energy and use it in real time to displace other resources throughout the EIM footprint, and likely displacing higher emitting resources. So in Q4, we had a fairly moderate amount of avoided curtailment. Just the overall curtailment picture was not as great. We're in that tail end of the year. We're going to haven't entered spring yet. When we enter spring, we expect to see the amount of potential curtailment and the also the avoided curtailment opportunities to reduce or to increase in that period of time when we have the higher amount of surplus solar, surplus wind, and low load conditions. Slide 10, please. In closing, the last set of slides just provide a better or increased granularity of view of the transfers that are actually economically occurring between systems. So each one of these graphs provides for each in the EIM entity area a 24-hour view of the patterns of import or export transfers out of the area. And the bar graphs basically represent the 90%, 10% to 90% tile of the observations over that month, and then the whiskers are effectively the tail ends of the observations. So you can see here that in the middle of the day, it's not unusual where when California has surplus energy, we're seeing patterns of imports into the other areas, and that's basically absorbing California exports of the surplus energy in the middle of the day. And you can see the ISO's export picture in the lower left corner of the set of graphs. And then in the evening, when the sun goes down and the surplus solar energy is reduced, we see oftentimes where the turnaround occurs, where those other areas then tend to export into California and other areas, and then California ISO tends to be doing some amount of import in that area.
Just comment on this one.
Sure.
When I talk about EDAM, this is better, by the way. When I talk about EDAM, we frequently talk like EDAM is going to be much larger energy transfer than EIM, which actually is not the case. If you see CalISO in some periods of the day, it's exporting 4,000 megawatts, and that's not small. So we're going to see some increase in their head, but not as there is discussion out there that EDAM is going to be ordered to a magnitude larger volume of energy exchange.
So just thank you, Petter, just to make one point on that 4,000 megawatts observed. This is 4,000 megawatts of EIM transfer, and in fact, when we see these levels of EIM transfer, that's very robust. In the total net transfer out of the ISO during these times are probably approaching 1,000 or 2,000. So effectively, the ISO, the EIM transfers that are occurring in the EIM are countering what may be import transfers coming from the day ahead market into the ISO, and for resulting in a net interchange of 1,000 to 2,000 net export. Again, the next set of slides just build out the rest of the view of Nevada, Pacific Core, East, West, Portland General area, and the last slide on slide 12 is for Puget Sound Energy in the PowerX area. And with that, I will take any questions.
Any questions from the governing body for Mark?
This is John. I have one actually for Petter.
Okay.
So, Peter, you made the point that we wouldn't expect the EDAM volumes to be much different than EIM or something to that effect, because I think a lot of us are thinking they're going to be much higher. Do you have just a brief explanation as to why?
No, I'm just saying transfers are highly dependent on amount of transmission provided. This is in line of discussions of authority of governing board or board that we have from EM entities, and all of these discussions starts like this could work this way because volumes were much smaller than going to be in their head. And all I'm saying, volumes are not going to be that much higher in their head. They will be higher, but they will be driven by transmission. But you already see that people are putting a lot of transmission in EIM. I understand Mark's point, but what is under control of EIM is 4,000. The transfer is 4,000 EIM. These other things going in and out throughout their head market is independent. So we are already in real time managing a large transfer. That was my point.
Yeah, so and I'll add to that, and that is I think the volumes will not increase drastically because we have such a large amount of transfer capability being offered into the EIM. What will happen, though, is I expect is those optimized transfers, those most optimized transfers will shift from what we see in the real-time EIM and will achieve those back in the day-ahead market, achieving a better optimized commitment decision over the EIM footprint. So some of the patterns, the flow patterns that we observe in the EIM and in the real time may translate back into the day ahead market.
And in addition to that, right now in the real time we cannot optimize longer minimum downtime, longer startup units. In day ahead we'll be able to capture that benefit that we cannot capture in the EIM today. But the key point, again, is that we are already managing a large transfers of energy in EIM.
Thanks. That makes total sense to me. I get that. And that is one of the benefits of going to the EDAM to optimize. But it'll be interesting to see how this thing all plays out when and if the EDAM goes forward, how it interplays with the energy imbalance market. But I totally get that you've only got, a certain amount of transmission, whether it's optimized in day ahead or the EIM. So thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from the governing body? Okay. Hearing none, thank you very much for the presentation and explanations, Mark. And before you step away, I'll just ask the operator to see if there are any questions or observations from our larger audience right now. Mr. Operator?
Once again, if you have a question or comment, you may hit 1 and 0 at this time. And at this time, there are no questions or comments in queue.
Okay, thank you, and thanks again, Mark. Next on our agenda is a decision on EIM governing body nomination. Jennifer Gardner, are you making this presentation, and are you available?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, I hear you very well. Thanks.
Wonderful. Thank you. Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Jennifer Gardner, and I am here today to present the recent decision regarding the latest EIM governing body nomination on behalf of the EIM nominating committee. I am an attorney with Western Resource Advocates, and I currently represent the public interest and consumer advocate group sector on the nominating committee. So let's go to the next slide, please. And before I begin with the recommendation of the nominating committee, I would like to, on behalf of the nominating committee, welcome our newest member of the governing body, Rob Konzioka. So I want to make sure I get that announcement out first. And then moving into the nominating committee's recommendations. So current member Anita Decker was appointed to the governing body on September 1st of last year. Because Ms. Decker was appointed to a term that was resulting from a from a vacancy following former member Christine Schmidt's departure from the governing body. This term actually ends on June 30th, 2020. So it was quite a short term, and the nominating committee needed to reconvene and meet to determine how to handle what to do at the conclusion of this particular term for member Decker. So the selection policy provides that members of the governing body are selected by a nominating committee that is comprised of various stakeholder representatives. And the nominating committee has some options in terms of how they can handle situations like this, which I will clarify the process for that on the following slides. Let's go to the next slide, please. So on this next slide, I just want to provide a brief refresher of who the members of the nominating committee are. I mentioned that the nominating committee follows a process and that our process is a little bit unique in situations like this where somebody is filling the remainder of a former governing body member's term. But just really quickly, on the left, you'll see the different stakeholder sectors, and on the right, you will see the representatives. So just a couple of quick clarifications here. First, Catherine Hackney, who represented the participating transmission owners over the past year or so on the nominating committee, also has been serving as chair. And I want to thank Ms. Hackney for her wonderful service as chair. I think she did a great job keeping us all very organized. And Ms. Hackney has unfortunately stepped down, and she is retired now, so I want to wish her the best. But I did just want to make sure and give my appreciation on behalf of the nominating committee for Ms. Hackney's service to date. I also want to note that on the left side, under the stakeholder sectors, you will see that there are three different sectors who have stars next to them. This simply indicates that pursuant to the selection policy for the EIM governing body, these stakeholder sectors are technically non-voting members of the nominating committee. But as an additional point of clarification, I want to note that the nominating committee really in practice works and operates on a basis of consensus of all of its members. In other words, this is a pretty tight-knit group that really wants to make sure that whatever decisions we reach, we have general consent, an agreement from the entire group. So in practice, this voting versus non-voting distinction really is irrelevant unless we can't come to a consensus. So I just want to note that clarification before moving on. So let's go to the next slide. So this is the process that the nominating committee followed this time. And again, this is a little bit unique because, as I said before, we were dealing with a situation where an existing member was fulfilling the remainder of a former member's term. So once the corporate secretary at the California ISO confirmed that all sectors had representation on the nominating committee then began officially the nomination process. So first we had to make sure that the governing body member whose term was expiring was actually interested in being renominated. And in this case, thankfully, Ms. Decker was interested in being renominated. At that point, the nominating committee then had a decision to make. We could either renominate the departing member without interviewing other candidates, and I should say potentially departing member without interviewing other candidates, or we could have decided to engage a search firm to find additional candidates in which we could interview to offer us some additional viewpoints and some additional candidates to consider for this next term. So in this case, given Ms. Decker's performance to date and the general satisfaction of the nominating committee members with her service, the nominating committee did decide to proceed without interviewing other candidates. And we ultimately decided to nominate Ms. Decker for the open seat. And then, of course, the final step in this process is that the governing body will make the final decision on the candidate. So let's go to the next slide, please. I've already covered a lot of this, so I don't want to repeat myself. As I already said, Member Decker has already expressed her desire to be renominated. The nominating committee has been very satisfied with her service to date and was very confident in renominating Member Decker without interviewing other candidates. What I want to do right here, though, is just briefly refresh not only the governing body but stakeholders on Ms. Decker's qualifications. We went over this the first time when Ms. Decker was first nominated for the governing body, but I certainly don't think it can hurt to provide the refresher. Ms. Decker has over 39 years of electric utility experience, most recently as executive director of the Northwest Public Power Association. And before that, she also served as COO of Bonneville Power Administration. She was the acting administrator of the Western Area Power Administration, and additionally served 27 years at Pacific Corp. So a pretty impressive track record for Member Decker, and I want to make sure that information is provided as we consider her nomination today. Let's go to the next slide. So in terms of the EIM nominating committee's deliberations, as I mentioned, we were consensus-driven in those deliberations with the goal of identifying quality candidates to fill the expiring term. We chose to renominate Ms. Decker without going out into the market and examining other candidates. So we are proposing today to renominate Anita Decker for a new term beginning July 1st, 2020, and ending June 30th, 2023. And with that, I am complete with my prepared remarks, but I would like to open it up for any questions from the governing body or from the stakeholder audience. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jennifer. I'm very happy that Anita has chosen to put herself forward for a renomination. Thank you for that thorough and useful explanation of your decision. Would anyone on the governing body wish to say something at this time?
Well, this is Val. Many thanks to the significant effort put forward by the nominating committee this year, as we had ultimately two openings to fill. Many thanks to John for running this down for us. And then, Anita, so glad you decided to stay, and looking forward to a full term for you. And for me, it's great that I get to work with you.
Anyone else?
Carl, this is Anita. I don't know if it's a... Hello?
Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know if it's appropriate for me to make comments, but I'm going to... Jennifer, thank you so much for that. The confidence that you and the committee have expressed in my continuation to serve. So thank you very much for that. I do want to express verbally, since we're doing a phone call, that I do desire to continue to serve on the governing body, and it's been a great learning opportunity. It's a great group of people to work with, and I'm just looking forward to the many decisions that are going to be coming before us in the next year to 2 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Anita. Roger, I can't recall whether we take public comment on these nominations or not at this point. Could you let me know if we do that?
Well, I think that's in your discretion, and you're certainly welcome to. I know Jennifer had invited it, and if you want to see if there's any public comment, there is no prohibition against doing so.
Okay. Thank you, Roger. So, Mr. Operator, I would like to open up the lines, see if anyone in the audience would like to make a public comment on Ms. Decker's nomination at this time. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to make a public comment, you may hit 1 and 0 at this time. At this time, there are no comments in queue.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is there any further discussion on the part of governing body members before we ask Mr. Carlton to read the motion. Hearing none, Roger.
Excellent. So I will go ahead with the motion. Anita, you are recused from voting on the motion, so don't feel like I left your name out when we get to that point. Move that the Energy Imbalance Market Governing Body reappoints Anita J. Decker to the Energy Imbalance Market Governing Body for a term beginning July 1, 2020 and ending June 30, 2023.
So moved.
So John moved and
I'll second.
And Val second, and we'll go through the vote. Chair Linville?
Yes.
John Prescott?
Aye.
Valerie Fong?
Yes.
Rob Konziolka?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you, and congratulations, Anita.
Congratulations, Anita. Look forward to working with you for future years.
Thank you.
Okay. Next on our agenda, we have informational reports, which may be brought out if any member wishes to call any out for any kind of discussion. Is there any such request? Hearing none, are there any other items that we need to discuss today, Roger, before we adjourn?
None that we have here, Chair Linville.
Okay, great. So we are adjourned for today. Thank you all very much.
Excellent. Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conferencing service. You may now disconnect. And speakers, just a moment.